Okay, we can start. Yesterday I had the speech right before the party, today right before the lunch, so I don't want to keep you more than I need. My name is Matteo. I work in Microsoft and I'm from Italy. Even if I work for a worldwide team called AppConsult, which is born to support Windows development. Started with Windows Phone, now Windows 10, we are basically supporting every platform out there because, as you know, Windows 10 runs basically everywhere. And today I want to talk to you about a better way to create Windows applications using two techniques. The first one is a pattern, which is called Model View Model. And it's an approach, a different approach than the standard one to create XAML-based applications. In fact, the first part of the speech, even if I'm going to show you samples with Universal Windows Apps, can be applied to any XAML-based technology. So WPF, Silverlight, XAMarin Forms, and so on. In the last part, instead, I will show you how some of the challenges that you may face when you start working with Model View Model in a Windows 10 application can be solved thanks to Template 10, which is a new template, an open source template that our team in Microsoft is building to support the development of Windows applications in an easier and better way. So why Model View Model? Let's start from the beginning. Usually when you create a new project in Visual Studio and you start creating a new XAML project, the standard approach is called the code behind approach, meaning that in a XAML application you have the file .xaml, which contains the layout of the page, and you have the XAML .cs or .vb, based on the language you use, which is the code behind file. The code behind file is the class where you can store all the logic of your application and handles the interaction between the user interface and the logic of the application. So you handle the click of the button, the selection of an item, everything connected to the user interface. The problem of this approach is that the more the project starts to grow, the more you face challenges because you have a very tight connection between the logic and the presentation of the data. So it's hard to solve and find bugs because when you experience a bug, it's hard to understand which is the context of this bug. It's hard to do testing, especially when you start working with big projects. Nowadays, one of the most widely used approaches is to introduce unit testing. Unit testing is a way to perform automatic tests on small pieces of code that basically validates that your code is running fine. And the goal of unit testing is that when I have to change some other parts of my code, with this automatic test, I'm sure that I'm not breaking other parts of the applications. However, these tests, since works on the smallest piece of code as possible, you need to have you can't have a tight integration with the user interface because otherwise it would be hard to test this kind of data. It's also complex for a designer that works with XAML to design the user interface of your application because a designer usually should care only about the context. So I have an application that displays a list of customers. I need to know which kind of data I want to display about this customer. A designer shouldn't know all the inner details about the data, so if the data is coming from a database, a REST service, the cloud. Instead, with the code behind approach, since everything is mixed together, if a designer wants to create the XAML for the user interface and wants to test the data, test the app, have some data for designing, needs to have the real connection with the real services. The Model View Model pattern is born to solve all these problems. And generally speaking, it's not just the Model View Model pattern. Basically, all the patterns out there, like Model View Controller, Model View Presenter, are born for this reason, trying to isolate as most as possible the presentation layer for, with the business logic, with the data layer. Model view, model pattern is specific for the XAML world, or at least it's the most widely used in the XAML world, because as we're going to see in the next slides, it's based on the standard XAML features, like data binding, dependency property, the iNotify property change the interface, so it makes heavy use of all the infrastructure provided by the XAML. In the model view model pattern, you split basically your project, your code, into three parts. You have the model, which is the raw part, meaning that it's all the business logic, all the entities, everything that works with the data of your application, without having a dependency on how this data will be presented to the user. So in a beautiful technology and programming world, you should be able to take this model in another application and it should work just fine because you don't have any connection with how this data will be presented to the user. On the other side, you have the view. The view is the presentation of the data, and in the XAML world, it's the XAML page. So the view is the .xaml file with all the layout of the page. In the middle, the connection between the view and the model is made by the view model. The difference between the view model and the code behind class is that the view model is just a plain simple class. It doesn't inherit from any special page class. It doesn't have any connection with the view. It's a basic class. The connection between, so the view model takes care of reading and updating the data from the model, and using the tools that we're going to see in a few moments provided by the XAML frameworks, connects to the view, prepares the data to be presented, and passes the data to the view in order to display it. Which are the fundamental concepts of the XAML framework which are used in the model view model pattern? The first one is data binding. Data binding is a channel. It's probably the most important features of the XAML, and it's a way to create a channel where you can connect the properties of two objects. You have a source object and a target object, and you can connect these two. This channel can be also bidirectional. So for example, if you have a text box control and you want to connect it to a property in your code, you can leverage the bidirectional channel because the text box is also an input control. So in your code, you want to get what the user has written into the text box. In model view model, the binding typically is used to connect all the XAML controls with the properties in the view model. So this is how you handle the connection between the view model and the view. And the snippet of code you find here is just a basic example. You have a property called name in your view model, and you want to connect it to, you want to display the value of this property into a text block control placed in the page. You do it through binding. So with this syntax, we are creating a channel between the text block control in the view and the name property in the view model. However, the code we've seen before has a flaw. That if during the execution of the application, at some point we change the value of the name property, we won't see the value changing in the user interface. This is because no one has told to the both sides of the channel that the value has changed. We need to do that and take care of these notifications. And the infrastructure provided by the XAML framework to do that is an interface called iNotify property change. Every class that needs to propagate the notification of changes to the user interface needs to implement this iNotify property changed interface. As such, if you have followed me so far, it should be easy to understand that every view model implements the iNotify property changed interface. Because every time in your view model you need to change the value of a property, you need that the controls that is displaying the value of the property changes. In the framework, you have also a special collection called observable collection, which under the hood implements this interface. So whenever you change, add a new item to a collection, remove an item from a collection, change the order of the item in a collection, automatically you get dispatched these notifications. And if you have, for example, a list view control which is displaying the collection, you will see the item disappearing, adding, changing, based on what you are doing. So in terms of code, what changes? Compared to the old approach. Typically, when you need to create a property, which is a plain simple property, you use the short syntax provided by C#. So I have a property called name, it's a string, get set. However, this property is not dispatching any notification. It's not telling the channel that something has changed. So you have to change your code a bit. You have to go back to the old approach with the private property as a backend. The difference, the main difference here is that in the set of the property, so when I change the value of the name property, other than assigning the value, I raise a notify property change method. This method is a consequence of the implementation of the I notify property change interface. And basically this code is saying, hey, my value has changed, update your layout. So what happens is that the text block that is connected with binding to this name property will automatically update itself to display the new value. If you want to simplify your code and avoid generating all these properties, there's a tool called FODI, which is basically it's a NuGet package. And its purpose is to inject at compile time some logic. So FODI has a package called FODI.propertyChanged, which basically is able to inject this behavior for you. So once you have installed this package in your project, you just decorate your class with the implement property changed attribute, and automatically every property will implement the iNotify property change behavior. So you see here that you have a standard property name get set, but under the hood it behaves like this one. So it's dispatching the notification of the value changed every time the value changes. Another challenge when you start working with the model view model pattern is that you need to handle the interaction with the user. Typically, this is done with event and event handler. So I have a button, I subscribe to the click event, and in the code behind, Visual Studio generates an event handler to handle, which is a method to handle this click. The problem is that there's a tight connection between the event handler and the code behind. So when you generate an handler to handle an event, it's automatically generated in the code behind. You can't move it in another class, because otherwise the compiler isn't able to find it. To solve this problem, the XAML framework has introduced the concept of commands, which are a way to handle the user interaction with a property. Since it's a property and not an event handler, you can declare it wherever you want, even a view model. Because the view model is typically where all the fun happens, all the logic happens, so the user interaction needs to be handled in this view model. How you handle this? The framework offers a property, a base class called iComand. It's an interface. And this interface will allow you to specify which are the operations that you need to perform when you execute that command. Typically, the framework offers just the interface. So if you want to implement and have commands, you have basically to create a new class for every command you want to implement. Since this behavior can lead to having 100 classes just to handle commands. Basically, all the toolkits and frameworks that are available to implement this pattern offers an easier way to do that. In this example, you are seeing the syntax provided by ModelView ModelLite, which is a class called RelayCommand. The RelayCommand class accepts two parameters. The first one is the code I want to execute when the command is invoked. So in this case, when I trigger the command, I will call taskService.pin2start. The second parameter is a Boolean expression, which can help you to handle the state management of the command. So in this case, you can see that I'm evaluating a property called canPin. When canPin is true, the command is enabled. When canPin is false, the command is disabled. Why this feature is interesting? Because if you connect a command to a control, like I'm doing in this sample, automatically the visual state of the control will change based on the status. So if the command is disabled, the button will be automatically disabled. If during the execution I re-enable the command, the button will be automatically re-enabled. As you can see, since these commands are not methods but are declared with a property, I can connect them with the XAML just with binding, as I did before with the name property. The only difference here is that I'm using a special property called command, which is exposed by every control that allows to handle the user interaction. So button, checkbox, radio button, and so on. There's an alternative, starting with Windows 10, because ModelView, and generally speaking, the binding approach, has a performance cost in the application, because the binding is evaluated at runtime, not at compile time. So when the application is running, all the binding expressions are evaluated in real time, and this has a performance cost. XBind is a new expression introduced in Windows 10, which is basically a way to get compiled bindings. Meaning that when you create a binding expression using XBind, under the hood, there's a static compilation of the binding channel. The advantages of this approach is the better performances, because there isn't any more runtime evaluation, and you get errors at compile time. If you make your mistakes with bindings, with traditional bindings, you realize that only when the application is running. So for example, if you create a binding with a property in your view model that doesn't exist, you don't get any errors. You realize that you did something wrong just because when you launch the application, you don't see the behavior you are expecting. Instead, with this compiled binding, you get errors when you are compiling the app. And one of the most interesting features of XBind is that it doesn't work just with properties, but it works also with methods. So you can have an event click, which is binded with the XBind with a method in another class. And the advantage of this approach is also that the command is connected only to the primary interaction of the control. So for example, if you have a button, the command property is connected to the single tap. If you want to handle the double tap, the drag and drop, other events, you need to find other ways. Instead here, since we are using the basic events, we can subscribe to any events using this syntax and using bindings. Okay, we've seen the binding, we've seen how we connect pieces in the UI with pieces in our view model, which is the glue that put all these together. It's the data context. The data context is a special property which is exposed by every control, and basically it defines the binding context. So when I set the data context in a control, I'm saying, hey, from this moment, in this control is able to access to all the properties exposed by this class. The data context is hierarchical, meaning that if I have a control and I have some other children controls, all the children controls will be able to access to the properties exposed by the data context of the father. This is important because the glue that connects the view with the view model is the fact that the page in a Windows application is a control and it has a data context property. The view model is the data context of the entire page. So in a page, I'm able to access, in all the controls inside the page, I'm able to access to all the properties of my view model. Model view model is a pattern, not a library or a framework. It's a way of thinking and a way of defining your project. However, when you start working with this pattern, you will realize that there are a lot of things that are quite repetitive, and they need to be redone from scratch every time you start the project. For example, your models needs to implement the I-Notify property changed interface, so every time you need to create an handler that propagates the changes to the interface. To avoid this annoying and repetitive approach, there are toolkits and frameworks that makes easier for you to start up a new project and not to reinvent the wheel every time. The most, probably the most popular one is ModelView Model Lite. It's developed by a very popular Microsoft MVP, Laurent Bunyon. And it's the most flexible and light toolkit available, meaning that it provides you just the basic infrastructure to implement the model view model pattern. So you have a base class to implement view models, you have a base class to implement commands, and so on. And it works basically with XAML technologies. Since it's so light and so flexible, it can be easily integrated with existing projects, other frameworks, other toolkits. The only downside of ModelView Model Lite is that since it's so light, if you need to solve the challenges that, for example, developing a universal Windows app in ModelView Model may improve, you don't have any tools to do that. You need to rely on other libraries or create your own infrastructure to solve these kind of challenges. Template 10 is one of them, and we're going to see it later. Otherwise, you have a completely different approach provided by frameworks like Calibur, Micro, and Prism. They are both community-driven projects. Prism was a Microsoft project, now it's open source and driven by the community. And they are frameworks, meaning that other than providing the basic infrastructure, they provide also services to solve specific problems on the platform. So, for example, when it comes to universal Windows apps, they help you to solve problems like how to handle the navigation, how to handle the lifecycle management, how to handle the settings, the sharing contract. So not just architectural problems, but also specific problems of the platform. So the advantage of this approach is that you are faster to start a new project. The downside is that since they are all based on a set of conventions to connect all the pieces together, they can hard to understand in the beginning, and it's hard to take a third party developer into your project, because if you don't know how this framework works, what you see can be considered like magic, because you see connection between a view and a view model, but you don't understand how this is possible because, for example, you don't see the data context manually set. So if you bring in another developer that doesn't know one of these tools, it can be hard for him to understand what's going on. ModelView Model Lite, instead, since it's based on standard XAML infrastructure, even if you don't know ModelView Model Lite, but you know the XAML, it's easier for you to understand what's going on. Let's say a very simple demo. Here I have a very, very, very simple application, which basically has a text box, a button, and another text block. And with a lot of creativity, I had a lot of creativity when I created this demo, when you press the button, you say hello. And this is done with the traditional code behind approach. So I have assigned a name to the text box, username. I have declared an event handler on the click of the button. I have assigned the message name to the other text block. And I simply do in code behind that when I click the button, I compose the hello message with the name inserted by the user, and I display it. If you're not familiar, this is one of this syntax is one of the new features of C Sharp 6 to handle string format. Let's say how to change this using the model view model pattern. So when you use the model view model pattern, the goal basically is to clean this code behind. So typically the code behind gets empty. You don't have anything in the code behind. So let's start with this refactoring, and let's see, the first thing is to create our view model. So we have to move what we were doing in the code behind in another class. As you can see, this class, it's a simple class. It's not the code behind file. It's just inheriting from view model base, which is a class. This sample is done with model view model light. What I'm getting with model view model light is that I simply have this set method, which automatically takes care of dispatching the notifications for me. So what I need to do is that I need to get the name of the user from a text box, so I need a name property, and I want to display a message to the user, so I need a message property. The other stuff is that I need to handle the click on the button, so I can't use anymore an event handler, I use a command. And this is how my commands look like. Looks like. So it's a relay command object, and using the anonymous method, I'm saying that when the command is invoked, I take the message property, I take the name property, and I combine it with the hello message to prepare this message. How can I display this stuff on the page? With binding. In the code behind, I'm saying that the data context of my page is the main view model we've seen before. And now I can connect things using binding. So I have the text box, which is in binding with my name property. And it's a two-way binding in this case, because I need to read the value added by this user. I had my button connected to the command, and I have the text block connected to the message. One of the advantages of this approach is that since they are independent, I have created this view model without having to create first my view. In code behind, this is impossible. Why? Because if I want to grab the value of the name property, I need to declare the text block with X name, surname, for example, or name. In this case, instead, since I don't have this connection, I'm able to create this view model thinking about the UI, but without having a specific connection with the UI. I can create the UI later, and I can connect things together with this with the binding. Another cool thing is that, as you can see, this command has also a Boolean condition, which is evaluated, which says if the string, if name is null or empty, disable the command. So what happens is that basically for more or less free, I get the following experience. This is the very complex application. Once it starts, the very complex application. Okay. As you can see, the button is disabled. But I'm not doing anything special, or I'm checking if it's automatically disabled. Why? Because the name property is empty. As soon as I start writing something, the name property The command is evaluated again, and the button gets gets enabled. I delete everything, and the button is disabled again. So with a lot of creativity, basically this is what I'm doing. I'm not setting the text property of a control, but I'm saying the message property now it's equal to hello Matteo. And since I have a binding channel connected to this text block, automatically I get dispatched the notification that the value has changed, and I get the message displayed on the user interface. Are you still with me? Okay, because now we're going to the complex stuff. Dependency injection is not something that is required for doing model view model. You can do model view model without dependency injection. However, for complex projects, if you don't use dependency injection, you can lose a lot of the benefits of the model view model pattern. Let's try to explain what dependency injection is. Typically, in an application, in a complex project, in your view models, probably, will have a dependency with services, which can be other classes where, for example, mix data from a database, from a cloud service, do some stuff. So in your view model, probably you have a service that you use in your view model, and then you get data, you read data, you prepare the data to be displayed, and so on. With the traditional approach, when you have these kind of services, which are classes, you create them at compile time, which means that in my view model, probably at some point, I have something like this. Data service equal new data service, and then I start calling methods of this data service. Which is the problem with this approach? Let's say that my application is not made by one view model, but it's made by 2, 3, 4, 40 view models, because it's a complex application. And every one of these view models is using my data service. So in 40 view models, I have 40 times this line of code. Data service, service, new data service, and I perform the operation. Which is the problem here? Let's say that at some point, I need to do some testing. And instead of using the data service, I need to use a sample data service, which instead of connecting with the production services, it uses fake data generated just for testing. Or at some point, the data service isn't anymore connected to a local database, but to a cloud service. So with this approach, you would need to go in each view model and change the initialization of the data service. With the advantages should be clear. The first one is that I can forget to change one of them. So I launch my test application and I'm still seeing production data. Or the worst, I forget to reverse back one of the changes, I publish my application on the store just to realize that I'm still displaying in some parts of the application fake data. Dependency injection is a way to solve this, because basically with dependency injection you introduce the concept of dependency container, which is basically a box. And in this box, you put all the classes you need to use in your application. So, view models, services, everything is into this box. When I need to use a view model, I don't create anymore manually a new view model, but I go and pick the view model from this box. The box will automatically check if there are dependencies, like in this case, the main view model class has a dependency with the data service, because in the constructor of the class, I have a reference to the data service. And if in this box I find that I have a data service in this box, I pick it and I pass it to the view model. So instead of manually instantiating all the classes at compile time, I simply, when the app starts, I simply put in my box all my classes, and when the app is running at runtime, the box gives, the container gives the classes for me. So, which is the advantage of this approach? That when I have to switch the implementation of a class, I don't do it in every single view model, but I just change what I've placed in my box, in my container. So for example, let's say, like in this slide, that I have the vModel, and I have this dependency with this interface, iDataService. This iDataService has a concrete implementation, which is the DataService class. So in my container, I'm saying, when some classes ask you an iDataService, give me a DataService implementation. It's time to switch this implementation, because the backend changed it, because I need to use DataService. I simply do this. At some point, I say, hey, container, I don't want anymore to use the DataService. I use the test DataService. And automatically, all the view models that have a reference to this iDataService will start getting the test DataService in replacement of the DataService. So I can swap the implementation just by changing the registration in the container. I don't have to go in every single view model to change this implementation. So this is how the final result will look like. All the view model goes to the container, all the container gives me the view model, this iDataService is registered into the box, and if I want to change the implementation, I simply do this. I say that at some point, iDataService is connected to a different class than the original one. So to recap, with dependency injection, when the app is initialized, all the view models and the services are registered into this container. And when a view requires a view model, it's the container that gives the view model to the view. And this container will take care not just to give the view model class, but also to give all the dependencies that this view model class has. If you want to change the concrete implementation of a class, of a service, you just change the registration in the container. You don't have to go in every view model to change them. Are you lost? Everything is clear? Let's see a demo to make it easier to understand. So here I have a slightly more complex sample where I have a view, and in this case the view has a list view, which is the control to display a collection, and it's connected to a property called people. So I'm displaying a collection of people objects. This people collection is made by simply person objects, name and surname, nothing special, nothing fancy. But I have a data service, and I have an interface which simply describes what this service does. It's not an implementation, it's just a description. And they say that the iData service has a method called getItems, which returns a collection, an IEnumerable of person. And then I have two classes which implements this interface. The real one, which simply, this could be something coming from a web service, from a database. In this case, I'm just simply initializing the collection with three real existing people, as you can see. And then I have a design data service, which instead is generating 100 fake persons. In my ViewModel locator, which is a class that takes care of dispatching the view models to all the views, I have this code. Simple IOC is the container provided by ModelViewModelLite. There are many of them. This is the one included in ModelViewModelLite. And I'm saying, if the application is running in design mode, meaning that it's not running, but the user is designing it with the Visual Studio Designer, I want to connect the iDataService interface with the design data service class. Instead, if the application is running normally, I want to register the iDataService interface with the data service class. And then I register the main view model. I have placed in my box, in my container, the main view model and the iDataService interface. And then I have a property called main, and this property with this property, I'm not creating manually a new instance of the new model, so I don't have new main view model, but I'm going to the simple IOC, to the dependency container, and say, give me an instance of the main view model. So the container will go in the box and will pick up the main view model instance for me. So what happens is that then in my page, I have this, so the data context is connected to this main property you've seen before. So what happens is that when I launch this application, the application is running, I'm not designing it. So what happens is that I'm registering in the container the real data service. So what happens is that I have the list of my free people coming from the real service. But as soon as I go back to Visual Studio and try to open the designer, you will see that here I'm seeing design the data which is defined into the design data service. So I'm not using anymore the real service, but I'm using the fake one. And as you can see, I didn't have to go in the view model and change the service I was using. I just changed in the registration this code. Let's say that you don't have one view model, but you have 20, 30 view models that are done this way. You can change the implementation just going here and say, okay, at this, from now on, I don't want anymore that the iData service needs to be connected to the real one, but I want to use the fake one. So for example, now if I launch the application, I expect to see also in this case the list of fake people that I have generated with the fake data service. Let's imagine this not with one view model, but with a 30 view model. It's easy to understand how dependency injection is not strictly required to do model view model, but doing model view model in complex projects without dependency injection, you lose a lot of the benefits that you get with this pattern. Okay, so far we've seen a generic implementation of model view model. So as I said before, the examples I showed you are related to Windows 10 apps, but could have been a WPF app, Xamarin apps, no difference. However, when you start working with model view model in a real Windows 10 application, you start to face some challenges. For example, what if I need to handle the navigation? When I need to navigate from one page to the other in the traditional approach, you do it with the frame class. The frame class, you have access to this class only code behind, because the code behind class inherits from the page one, so you have this frame. You don't have the frame class in our view model. What if I need to handle the life cycle? So I need to understand when the page is loading or when the user is moving away from the page. Typically, you use the onNavigated to and onNavigated from event, but again, these are kind of events that are triggered in the code behind. You don't have them in a view model. Template 10 is a way to help you solving these problems. It's an open source project which is created by Jeremy Nixon. Jeremy Nixon is one of the top DX evangelists in Corp on Windows 10 topics. For example, the course on the Microsoft Virtual Academy on Windows 10 development is made by him. And it's an open source project available on GitHub as a NuGet package or as a Visual Studio extension. And the goal is to replace the standard template developed Universal Windows R. Why? Because the standard template is simple, but sometimes can be too simple, and can also be complex to handle some things. For example, one of the most interesting features provided by Template 10 is the concept of Bootstrapper. If you have already done Windows development, you know that the starting point of an application is the app class. And the app class has all the starting point, the starting events to handle that the application has been launched. However, the problem is that you have different endpoints based on how the application has started. So the application has been launched from a tile, you have an activation point. The application has been launched due to Cortana, you have another activation point. The application has been launched with a toast notification, you have another entry point. And this can make things complex to handle. The Bootstrapper is basically a replacement of the app class, which hides a lot of the stuff that it's automatically done by the framework under the hood, and gives you just a single entry point on start async. In this method, you just need to understand the activation type with the start kind parameter, and based on that, you just simply navigate to the page that you want to use as a landing page for this scenario. So if it's a standard navigation to the main page, if it's Cortana activation, maybe a specific page to end the voice command, and so on. You have also some new controls, which makes easier to implement the user experience of some of the new Windows 10 application, like news, mail. So you have a control to have a page header with some commands, and to create the hamburger menu experiences. So this panel swaps from the left to the center of the page. You have the automatic handling of the back button. Every platform in Windows 10 has the concept of back button, and you need to handle it because by default the back button automatically redirects to the user to the start page, while your application typically says that the back button needs to be used to go back to the previous page of the application. In a standard Windows 10 project, you need to do this manually. Template 10 takes care of this for you using the new APIs that have been added in Windows 10, which are part of the System Navigation Manager class. This is a set of new APIs because they can manage the back button across every different platform. So in a desktop application, you can have the back button on the Chrome of the page. On tablet or on a PC in tablet mode, you have the back button in the taskbar, or you have the back button, the real back button in a phone. This System Navigation Manager API is able to handle the back button pressed across all these different devices. And then you have some helpers for doing model view mode. And this is how you can integrate template 10 in your project to get benefits in your model view model approach. For example, you have a class called Navigation Service, which you can use to handle the navigation from a view model into another page. So you have this navigation service that works like the standard frame class, so you can call the navigate method and pass the name of the page, the type of the page, and the parameter. As a consequence, you have also a base class called ViewModelBase, which you can use to leverage your view models. And this base class gives you access to the navigation events. So even inside a view model, you are able to detect when the user is navigating to the page or is navigating away from the page. And you are able also to get the parameters. For example, if you have parameters that are going from one page to another, to understand, for example, which item the user has selected. There's also the automatic handling of the app state. I don't know if you have followed my session yesterday about the life cycle of the application. You would know that when the application is running and at some point you decide to not use it anymore, the application is suspended. And after a while, if the system is going down on resources, it gets terminated. So one of the goals of the developers is to save the state of the application in order to give to the user the impression that the app has never been closed, even if it was terminated under the hood. Template 10 gives you these helpers too easily handle the states. Basically, when you are navigating away from a page, you have this dictionary called state, where you can save the information that you need to restore the state of the page, like which was the selected item, a text inserted in a text box, and so on. Automatically, when the application is suspended, template 10 will take care of saving this data into the local storage, and when the application is reopened again, it will take care of reloading the data from the storage and passing it to the various pages of the application. And there's more. You have a set of built-in converters, you have a set of built-in behaviors, you have a set of built-in helpers like setting service to easily handle settings, dispatcher helper to easily get access to the UI thread, and so on. Template 10, as I said before, one of the benefits of Model View Model Light is that it's very light and flexible. So it's easy to integrate it with the Template 10. Just add Model View Model Light in your Template 10 project, and use what's best in between the two worlds. So for example, when you need to have the view model based class for your view models, it's a good idea to use the template 10.1 because it gives you access also to the navigation events. While, for example, if you want to do the IOC, the dependency injection we've seen before, you want to have a messaging infrastructure, you can leverage the one provided by Model View Model Light. Let's see a small demo of the same sample we've seen before, but done with template 10. So what changes? Well, one of the things is that we are changing. This is the same sample we've seen before, so we have the data service, which is generating people, and so on. The main difference here is that in the previous page, in the previous sample, we were initializing the collection of data into the constructor. This is not a good practice, also because probably your data will come from a REST service, from a cloud service, from a database, so it's very likely that you are going to perform asynchronous operations. And you can't have a synchronous operation into the constructor of a class. You can't use async await in the constructor of a class. So a good place where to do the initialization is the onNavigated2 method. Since it's a method, it can be asynchronous. It can handle asynchronous code. Template 10 makes it easier to do that because I have the onNavigated2. So in my onNavigated2, in the view model, I just use my data service, and I define the people collection, which is the one displayed to the user. And then another thing you can notice is that I'm using the navigation service to handle the navigation from one page to the other. So if I go in the view of my page, you can see that I'm using the XBind syntax. I subscribe to the item click button, event handler, so when the user clicks on an item on the list, I get the information about the selected item, and I pass this information to the detail page. Everything is happening in the view model. I'm not touching the code behind. And in the detail page, I have a couple of text blocks with the name, and a text box where I want to add some notes about the person. However, let's see the code of the view model, or to better say, let's see how this app behaves so that I explain you the state management. So the app is compiling. The app is still compiling. No, I don't want the debug symbols. Okay. I have always my list of people. When I click on one of them, I go to the detail page, and then I start to add some notes. I don't don't say, I haven't pressed the save button yet, because for example I'm on a phone and I received a message on WhatsApp and I wanted to answer. So the app gets suspended, that let's say that it's also terminated, because the operating system was going down on resources. I opened the application, and as a user, I didn't know that the app was terminated, because it was done in a transparent way directly by the operating system. I expect to find everything as it was before. But since I'm not handling the state management, this is what I get. Template 10 does one thing automatically for us. As you can see, I'm back to the data page. I'm not to the main page. So template 10 has already done something for us. It kept track of the page where I was, and it automatically redirected me to that page. I'm not starting from scratch. However, I've lost the content of the nodes because I haven't saved this. Template 10 makes easier to handle this with this state parameter, which you have in the onNavigated to and onNavigated from events. So what I do is that when I'm navigating away from this page, if the app is being suspended, I add a new value to this dictionary. And when I'm navigating to, if this dictionary contains something, it means that I'm coming from a state restore, and I restore the state and I clear the page. I clear the state to avoid that if I don't clear the state, the problem is that now every time I start to navigate to this page, I will keep getting this value. So I clear the state that to say, okay, I restore the state, I don't need it anymore. Now if we try it again, now the application is starting from scratch, so we are starting, we don't have any more the requirement of template 10 that is moving us to the last visited page, because we are starting from scratch, so it's a new launch of the application. So I'm going to the main page, when I will see the main page, okay. Let's write some notes, and let's suspend the application and terminate. Now we have saved in the state, in the dictionary, some data, and template 10 took care of serializing this data into the local storage. So now when I open the application again, template 10 will go to the storage, take the data, and repopulate these dictionaries. So now what I'm expecting is that when I'm returned to the last page, but I haven't lost the data I have inserted into my textbook, because it was saved into the storage automatically by template 10. So as you can see, template 10 makes very easy to handle this scenario, because I just need to take care of identifying which are the data that is important for me to save, but I don't have to care about, okay, I need to redirect the user to the last page, I need to reload the data from the storage, I need to clean it. Everything is done automatically. So to close the speech, how to get template 10? There are three ways. If you want to always stay, the project is keeps moving very fast, because Jerry Nixon is very active and there are a lot of contributors on GitHub, so the project is moving very fast. So if you want to stay always up to date with the last version and the last features, you can just clone the GitHub repository, compile it yourself and add it to your project. Otherwise, if you want to stay on a more stable path, meaning that from time to time, when the features are more consolidated, the package is updated, you can install the NuGet package or install the Visual Studio extension. The Visual Studio extension basically gives you a new template in the Visual Studio, so you do file, new, Windows 10 project, template 10, and it will create a project like this. For example, with already the infrastructure with the app class like this. So the app class is not inheriting anymore from the application class, but from the Bootstrapper one. And as you can see, it's much simpler and smaller than the standard one. This is the easiest way to start. So if you, all the material is available online, so the slides are there, the demos are on a GitHub repository, and if you have questions, I'm here, I will be here during the lunch, and otherwise you can just send me an email and I will be happy to reply. Thanks for your time.